Hi, Barbie. Just a bit of caution. This episode is part of an 8-week series on the trans allegory of the Barbie movie. And there's going to be so many spoilers, just like so many you don't even know. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, definitely do that first. You won't regret it, though. It's amazing. Okay, on with the show. Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week we begin a big series so many of you have been waiting and asking for. Do you guys ever think about dying? Tilly Vision returns for the intentional trans allegory of Barbie the movie, part one. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the color that gives my life hidden meaning, Susan Bridges.
Hello.
Our guest this week is Millicent Alexis Book, who, in addition to being an out trans woman and a pharmaceutical buyer for a rural hospital in Ohio, is also just a person who loves and is loved. Welcome, Lexi.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here. I'm sorry. I'm super exuberant, I'm sure, coming across, but the excitement is real.
That's good. We love exuberance.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
I think you have the shortest and definitely sweetest bio of any guest we've ever had. And I think you're one of the kindest and sweetest people that I've ever had the pleasure of talking to. And I would like to ask you where that wellspring of kindness came from.
Oh, my goodness. I would have to say the largest source of wellspring of kindness in that in my life comes from my mother.
Yeah.
Who absolutely is one of my biggest supporters, and she has been a positive influence throughout my entire life. And the people I surround myself with too, like my wife Meg, they're all extremely supportive and very, very sweet themselves. And it's just when I'm surrounded by that much sweetness, it just kind of absorbs into me.
Sure. So,
and all of my friends that support me, I can't credit them enough as well. So thank you so much for being one of those.
Oh,
two of those.
It's amazing to hear that about your mom. And I love that because, you know, my mom died before I came out, but we had a very difficult, tense, not good relationship. And so I always love to hear from people who have supportive parents like that. I can't imagine what it would be like. We try to be that for our kid, you know, but we didn't have that good example, really. You didn't either. So we're kind of...
No, we are on it. Like, I am so glad you have great supportive family. I don't know what that's like. I never will, but that's okay.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm happy for you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, often we try to just do the opposite of what our parents would have done and be like, you know, we would have hated it. You know, we hated the things they did to us. So let's try to not be that. So,
absolutely.
I mean, and yeah, and when we write too, if someone wants us to write like, oh, and these two are like sisters and they get along so well, I'm like, don't know what that's like. You got the wrong person. But we do our best.
Exactly. Fortunately, there's so much in the world we can draw from. So even if we haven't got firsthand experience, we can all learn and grow and share.
Absolutely. Okay, so here's the questions you know are coming as a listener of this show. For you, what has been the best thing about transitioning?
Oh my goodness. Well, I've thought about this, and knowing it's coming, it's still a very hard question. But
yeah.
I would say the best part of transition for me has been the perspective that comes with it.
Yeah.
There's been so much that I have had my eyes opened by becoming who I am.
Yeah,
who
definitely.
I was meant to be. learning about myself has come naturally with learning about the history of queer people and the intersectionality that all marginalized groups share.
Right.
And I've remarked before on my Facebook that I love being trans, that I'm very happy to be who I am, and if reincarnation were a thing, if I were to be happy enough and fortunate enough to have a next life, I would want to be trans in it too, because
Same.
I just don't want to go back to being a person who doesn't have their eyes open to these social injustices in our world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've said a bunch of times that, like, once you trans people, once you realize you're trans and you start existing as your true self and you see all the transphobia in society and the ways that, they try to keep us from realizing our truth and transitioning, you start to see all the other ways that society lies to everybody, right? And it
Exactly.
opens your eyes to so much. And I would not want to trade that perspective for anything. So, absolutely agree. That's very well said.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so then the flip side for you, what has been the worst or most difficult thing about transitioning?
Gosh, the struggle is real. When you have to spend that initial moment of your life where you have the realization where your egg cracks and you have to start piecing your new identity together. While you're doing that, typically you're also in the closet about who you are. And that period of time where you're in the closet, you have so little support that you will be needing. You have so little of the community that you will eventually be able to access, and you're just existing in that space trying to find yourself. And I was in that space for a good bit of time, not as long as some people, but one, I want to say to all those people out there who are still in the closet, you are valid. You are absolutely seen by us, and we know the struggle. And the other thing I will say is, you start to become, in my case at least, I was very self-sabotaging by the end of my closeted space. I started doing things that were examples of impatience. With just being in the closet, I wanted out so badly. I started doing more and more things to signal to the world around me, hey, I'm trans.
Right. You're
And
hoping they'll accidentally find out so you don't have to hide anymore.
exactly. And I eventually outed myself more or less by telling people at certain people, telling them, don't tell anyone, but I'm trans. And that, of course, even though I trusted those people, didn't last. And
Of course. Oh, I'm sorry.
they no, it's okay. It's okay. I've forgiven them and we're still friends. But when you trust somebody, even if you think they're an ally, they can still out you. And I, knowing that I took the risk at work, and so I was outed at work before I was ready, but I was relieved because I could just start living as myself finally.
That's, it's so hard because coming out is such a difficult and individualized thing. And when somebody takes that away from you, that's really hard to deal with. But I also want to say about what you said about being in the closet and how hard it is. Feeling like you can't access community yet, and you have to do it all alone. That, like I've said before, that I was pretty sure that I was trans in 2015, and I had to wait till 2020 to transition. And I think I've mentioned in one of these past episodes, but there's been a lot, so I don't remember which one, that it was really hard knowing that I was trans, but not being able to access things that were for trans people because nobody knew that I was yet. So I felt like I couldn't. Like on Trans Day of Visibility, it was for me, but I couldn't tell anybody about it and I couldn't get the support from that. So it is really hard to know and be in the closet. So, yes, it's exactly as Lexi said to all of you out there who are, you're no less trans. You are valid. You are trans enough. And when the time is right, you will make it out and we will be here for you.
Absolutely.
Okay, before we get started, why don't you let people know where they can find you online if they'd like to get more Lexi afterward?
Oh my goodness. Well, my number one home on the internet is Tilly's Discord.
The Tillyverse.
The Tillyverse, exactly. Thank you so much. And I extended thanks to everybody on the mod team there, because without Jen and Val, approaching you with this idea and without you giving it your blessing, then, we wouldn't have that Discord. We wouldn't have that space. And it's done so much for me as far as community that being able to be there and be a part of it has become my new home, my online home. That said, I also have a Linktree. You can find me at Linktree/mysticalalexis. There's a period in between the TR and the EE in the URL. So Mystical Alexis is my online handle in most places, but I am also Mystical Mage in a couple where I made that before I was out. And so I'm in a lot of places. I'm not on the evil places, but many of them are
They're all a
evil.
little
But
bit
it's all
evil, though.
debatable. Yeah, they're
Well,
all
sadly,
debatable.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yay, capitalism.
But I'm not on the website, which shall not be named right now. Everywhere else.
And you are one of the mods at Tillyverse, so helping to keep things running and moving smoothly, and watching out for any ne'er-do-wells who might try to interlope. We've kept them all out. We have a pretty
Hit
good system
positive.
set up, so yeah. Absolutely.
That's funny that you mentioned that. I think I am one of those
You
mods.
are.
Yay! It's been a joy too.
Okay. I'm glad. It's been great having you there and getting to know you, and
we appreciate your effort.
We do.
Thank you both so much.
Okay. Are we ready to talk Barbie?
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
This movie rocked my world when I saw it because I instantly connected with it on a fundamental level, a level below the surface level feminist story, which I also deeply connected with. But I'm not alone. This movie had a huge impact on trans audiences, especially we trans women. I knew I needed to figure out why that was, and it's because there's a beating heart of transness within. You may not believe me now, but stick with me to the end, because by then I believe you will. Before we begin, let me remind you that Barbie has real trans representation in terms of actors, but not characters. You can read more about that in the 2023 Trans Rep in Movies and TV Trans Tuesdays.
And the podcast we talked about with Mo Ryan.
That's right, for three
Mo
episodes.
Ryan. It was so cool, you guys. Okay.
Okay, I've heard people say Barbie is Matrix for girls, but listen, the Matrix films are also for girls and non-binary folks, and Barbie is very much also for people of all genders. Let's not play into that reductive gendering of things. That's part of what Barbie is about. Come on. But I will say that Barbie is pink Matrix. Well, funny pink Matrix. And that's very much by design, as you'll see play out through this discussion. There's nearly 20,000 words to go because the movie is just that densely packed with transness.
I don't think you should have told people that.
All right. So, Lexi, when you first watched Barbie, did you pick up on all of the Matrix connections within?
There were some that were a little more obvious than others.
Yeah.
Some of the shots that were like the exterior of buildings and such, I didn't catch on those right away.
Yeah.
But there was the very obvious weird Barbie giving the choice
Yeah.
of one or the other
Of the
for her
shoes.
journey, the shoes
Yeah.
and various other references within. But the CEO and the Mattel agents and so much more. I'm getting ahead of everything. No, the Matrix homage is there. It's there to be
Yeah.
seen. And I say this having read in advance on everything that is coming, but there is absolutely everything you are going to say here is true. And to our listeners, just stick with it and you will get to where we are in the understanding.
That's right. See, if you can't trust me, trust Lexi. Okay.
And I missed a lot of the references, most of them,
Listen,
for sure. Because I don't notice things.
there are few people, I think, perhaps, in this world who are as familiar with the Matrix films as I am.
That is true.
And so I think perhaps I was uniquely positioned
That is
to
possible.
spot things better than others,
Yeah.
you
It's
know.
like they did that for you.
Oh, it's so nice. Thanks, Greta Gerwig. Okay.
Oh.
As with many of my trans allegory discussions, I will draw comparisons to the best and platonic ideal of all trans allegories, the Matrix franchise. But for Barbie, that's going to happen even more than normal, and not just because it's funny pink Matrix, but for a very important reason. I'm going to endeavor to make this as accessible to everyone as possible, but you will definitely get even more out of it if you've read Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix. The deeper your understanding of those movies, the better you'll understand Barbie. Now, I'm saying Barbie is an intentional trans allegory because, as with many of these discussions, sure, some of it may have been subconscious, but that makes it no less intentional. I was writing about my transness without knowing it for years before I realized and accepted it. But you're also going to see that some of this was very consciously intentional because it couldn't have happened any other way. But also, it intentionally references and calls back to the Matrix in so very many ways. And if you're intentionally referencing the strongest trans allegory in existence, then you have intentionally, and maybe without even knowing it, made your movie a trans allegory of its own. And it's not like there's only one or two things that nod to the Wachowskis' magnum opus. It happens again and again and again. Much like The Matrix, Barbie's about one person's transition from the man society expected them and wanted them to be to the woman they truly are, which is also pointedly not the woman society wants them to be. But even outside of The Matrix references, Barbie is a strong trans allegory. There's a whole lot to talk about. But maybe you don't believe The Matrix references were intentional. In any story about identity and societal expectations, there are bound to be similarities. So I will direct you to the Editor's Cut podcast, which is the show that talks to film editors about the movies they've worked on. In episode 85, editor Nick Hui is interviewed about his experience working with Greta Gerwig and editing Barbie. The Editor's Cut solicited audience questions and your girl submitted one, which was asked and answered. At 45 minutes and 35 seconds into the episode, Nick is asked my question, "Were all the parallels to The Matrix intentional?" His reply, "The short answer to that is yes, very much so. I'm sure the listeners will be happy to hear that. You can listen to it for yourself. There's a link in the show notes." There's your empirical proof. They intended to reference, repeatedly, the transiest franchise in existence. Think about why they would do that and what that says about what the Barbie movie is saying at different key points.
Absolutely.
Now, I've heard some people deride Barbie as feminism 101, and that we need more complex and nuanced representation and exploration of feminism. Because if your feminism isn't intersectional, it's not really feminism. And the same goes for supporting trans people. If your support of trans rights isn't also intersectional, you're not really supporting trans people. See the Trans Tuesday on trans intersectionality for more. That was episode 10 of this show. And I think it's because the surface story in Barbie is all about feminism, explicitly. But it's not explicitly about intersectional feminism, right? Except that it is, because Barbie makes a point of inclusion in terms of race, disability, body type, and yes, transness. Barbie is very clearly intersectional in execution, if not in the dialogue spoken. But all of that is to say that I actually agree that we need more nuanced and deep depictions of feminism in media. But Barbie is feminism 101 for an important reason, and it's also your very first Matrix connection. I've long said The Matrix is trans 101 because it's the absolute basics of transness. It's about realizing and accepting the truth of your transness and choosing to transition. And despite what you might think on the surface, that's a very universal story. Everyone has had moments in their lives where the expectations laid on us by society, family, friends, careers, have forced us into boxes we didn't belong in. Everyone knows that feeling, at least a little, and the fight to get to be true to yourself and who you really are.
The box and Barbie later on. Yeah.
Exactly right.
The box, like literal box.
Literal
box. We'll get there. It's episodes down the line, folks.
Absolutely. But there's just so much super text in this movie.
Yeah.
So much super text, which we'll also talk about what that is for those of you who have not read my book. Okay. But I've also said that Matrix Reloaded, Matrix Revolutions, and Matrix Resurrections are like trans 303 level classes. What they're saying about trans life is incredibly complex and nuanced. And I believe this is why so many people deride the Matrix sequels as confusing or bad. If you didn't understand the allegory at work in the Matrix, you cannot understand the much more complicated things the sequels are saying about transness, especially if you're cis. But the Wachowskis couldn't have said all those complicated, difficult things about trans life without the Trans 101 basics coming first. You need that base to work from. You can't jump into 300-level classes without taking the prerequisites and have any hope of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And how many movies have you seen that are directly about feminism? How many movies have you seen that say even a fifth of what Barbie has to say about womanhood and misogyny? Barbie is feminism 101 because it has to be. You need that foundation to branch out into deeper and more complicated discussions afterward. And one of the genius things about Barbie is that its feminism 101 is not allegory. It's all the surface story. In the Matrix discussions, oh, here we are, there's a term I use, supertext. It's the opposite of subtext. It's stating things plainly right in your face so that you can't deny them. Barbie often takes that a step further into supertext.
Do we really need supertext? Listen, I just...
Whereas the surface story of the Matrix franchise is a sci-fi parable of humans versus machines, Barbie's surface story is one of misogyny and the oppression of women and feminism, and that's part of its genius. Lexi, I wanted to ask you, what were your thoughts on the way Barbie portrayed feminism?
There's so much in there that there are layers.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting to try to peel those layers to one side or the other and see what's underneath them.
Yeah.
And without getting too overwrought in my discussion of this, it's just, I really enjoy any time that there are multiple layers to a story because it gives you so much more to work with and unpack and explore.
Yeah.
So I think that as a movie, Barbie did that very well because you have a very limited time to present all of these layers and all of their nuances. You've got different characters with different viewpoints. And all of that is going to get talked about later, I know, because I've read it. But the fact that feminism as a whole has evolved so much over time, you just can't fit all of that into one movie. So
yeah.
it's a very necessary layering, I think. And the fact that Greta Gerwig did as well as she did in this movie is a blessing.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you could have gotten into second wave feminism, third wave, you know, in getting into full intersectionality and still have done what you did. You know, it, like, there are so many people in the world, I think, but especially in the United States, who don't even have that feminism 101 mm-hmm. foundation, right? They didn't learn these things in school, or they live in parts of the country that are, you know, exceptionally oppressive and restrictive, and they might not have had exposure to these ideas before. And so I think it was really smart to do that, to take it from a foundational level and say, this is where we're starting. This is mm-hmm. the base level of misogyny
yes.
in society. You need
yeah.
to learn that before you learn more. So.
Exactly. We can't assume everybody starts off with a degree in feminism at the start of the movie. We're trying to
right.
make it approachable. And when you're trying to make things for a broader audience, you have to make compromises. So there is
yeah.
that. But it's still, I think, like when you get the speeches later on from
yeah.
America Ferrera, there's so much in there that is necessary to be said.
Absolutely. What did you feel about that, Susan? As a cis lady watching it, you're obviously very familiar with feminism. When you watched it, did you feel it was not doing enough? Did you feel like it was a good starting point?
I think it says some important things that maybe people wouldn't pick up on, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Even though, like you were saying, the surface story, like, just as an example, like, there's a whole bunch of reference in the beginning of the movie being like, any of these women are Barbie.
Right.
Mm-hmm, Anyone mm-hmm. can be Barbie. And
yeah.
so people of different races, different abilities, different, you know, like, some people have, I think someone has
an arm.
There's a prosthetic arm. There's a Barbie in a wheelchair.
But also, mm-hmm. when you think about it, all of those people are portrayed as very attractive, conventionally attractive,
sure,
fitting into the box.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. fine to be different as long as you still fit into the box.
Right.
And yet, on the surface, it's just saying everyone can be Barbie, which is also a great message.
Right.
But I like the different layers in that way because people don't realize that we're all taught from birth that there is a certain way a woman has to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No matter mm-hmm. what.
And Barbie is very much about that,
Barbie,
which we'll get into.
That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into that.
Yes.
But just in,
yes.
that was my thoughts on the surface in general.
Excellent.
I appreciate those thoughts so much because the Hollywood still has its own need for feminist revolution in many,
Absolutely.
Many ways. So, from my outside perspective, even, it's obvious. So
yeah.
the fact that you mentioned that all of those Barbies are extremely attractive people, yes, absolutely agreed. We need to get more, I don't want to say unattractive, but I will definitely say unconventional appearance.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
you know, just not the Hollywood standard appearance. We need to get more of those people into cinema, I feel.
And Alan gets into that a little bit too, where
he does
the outcast.
We'll talk about that. Yeah, but this actually reminds me that there is an old Trans Tuesday I did that has not been revised for the podcast yet, but will at some point. But if you go into Tilly's Trans Tuesdays and look, there is one specifically on representation of body type and the Hollywood ideal, which ties right into what Lexi's talking about. Mm-hmm. So if you want more on that, please go look that up. And eventually it will be here on the podcast. But for a movie that intentionally ties itself to the Matrix movies, it may not surprise you to learn that Barbie also uses color in very specific ways to say very specific things. And it is also allegorically about a trans woman's journey to self-actualization. Barbie is the story of one person's transition from Ken, yes, from Ken, to fully realized Barbie as she gets hung up figuring it out because she doesn't want to be stuck as the only kind of woman society says you can be. Evidence abounds. Keep listening, true believers. I won't go into all the details here, but red, blue, and yellow, in combinations thereof, and how they're used are a huge part of the trans allegories in the Matrix films. When you know the visual language of the movie and what the colors stand for, an entire world opens up to you. In this discussion of Barbie, what's most important are the colors Barbie is in. In the hyper-saturated world of Barbie Land, intense colors are everywhere. But keep your focus on Barbie herself and you'll learn a whole lot. If she or people that represent parts of her are in pink, she's dealing with doubt, which comes in many forms, or lies, false dichotomies, like the gender binary and stereotypical ideas of what a woman quote-unquote should be. See the Trans Tuesday on the False Dichotomy, episode 11 of this show. If Barbie or other characters who represent parts of her are in royal blue, she's experiencing connection. Mostly with her true self. A lot of blues appear in the movie, but those characters in royal blue are what you're looking for. If she's in earth tones, brown, green, yellow, earthy, oranges, or reds, anything natural, she's experiencing truth, of existence, of herself, of reality. Also, look for moments where any pink or blue show up together. Would you believe that, like the trans pride flag, it's an indicator of transness? It's true, my babies. It's so true, you won't even believe it. And here's another Matrix connection for you. Some of the people around Barbie represent aspects of her own psyche, and also like the Matrix, one very pointedly doesn't. The relationship between Barbie and Ken is vital. However, it's the opposite of the Neo and Trinity connection. In The Matrix, the entire thing is about Neo trying to become his true self, which Trinity represents. Every kiss between them is a vital moment of self-acceptance on the journey to self-actualization. In Barbie, Ken is the man Barbie does not want to be. The allegory is about someone rejecting masculinity but thinking only forced woman stereotypes await and not knowing what to do about it. Barbie never kisses Ken.
And that's so important.
Right? Do you know how huge that is when this is based on toys where Ken has been her romantic interest for over half a century? Did that not seem odd to you? Especially in a society where everything is gendered and compulsory cisness and heterosexuality are forced on us? Even in, especially in, media aimed at children. And this is a movie based on toys, which are for children? See the Trans Tuesday on Gendered Childhoods for more on that, which was episode 50 of this show. That Barbie and Ken never kiss is a choice. It is the opposite of the Matrix's self-acceptance. This is part of Barbie's rejection of the man society told her she was and had to be, but never knew how to be or wanted to be.
That's such a good observation. It really is. It drives home to me. It's the one of the linchpins in your argument here.
Yeah.
Getting ahead again. So I apologize if I'm getting ahead of everything.
No, fine.
It just excites me because knowing how pure those trans allegories in the Matrix films are, that they overlay so well with this movie. So I think listeners are in for a treat.
Yeah. Well, did you notice, I wanted to ask you, did you notice the first time you watched it, before you maybe had any idea that there was so much transness in the movie, did you notice that the two of them never kissed? And did you think that was really weird for her boyfriend of half a century?
I was looking at that fact throughout the movie and just thinking, wow, this is not a romance at all.
No.
And it could have easily been, this is a movie for children. This is a movie about a romance. This is a movie with heteronormative principles. And it was none of those things.
None of them.
So glad.
We have enough of that, really.
Yes.
Okay, more than enough. If you've read my Matrix breakdowns, you've maybe already figured this one out. Weird Barbie is Barbie's subconscious, our stand-in for Morpheus. Weird Barbie knows the truth and spends the entire movie trying to help Barbie accept it and become her true self. Ruth is Barbie's heart, our stand-in for the Oracle in the Matrix films. Our heart always knows the truth, but we can't hear it or accept it until we're ready to. It helps us figure out what we really want, and just like the Oracle, she's played by an older lady. The Mattel CEO is our stand-in for Agent Smith, who is the personification of transphobia, both implicit and explicit. The CEO serves the same function and is also the stand-in for misogyny in the surface-level story. He tracks much more closely to the representation of Smith in Resurrections, however, where he operates under the guise of being on your side, someone who quote-unquote gets it, but only because he can use that to solidify his own position of oppressing us. Gloria is the woman Barbie is inside. Not Barbie's self-actualization, like Trinity was for Neo, but her inner woman that's been in there and experiencing all the misogyny of our society for Barbie's entire life, even when she was trying to be the Ken society said she was. Sasha is the little girl Barbie has inside, the little girl she never was, but never got to be because society told her she wasn't a girl and couldn't be one. I think this is why Gloria and Sasha are mother and daughter, because those two versions of us are inextricably linked. Now, you've got the basics. I spent 9.5 hours watching the movie and taking notes, and 15 hours doing this write-up. And in the time it takes to post this, convert the text for the podcast version, and actually recording these podcast episodes, well over an entire day for one movie. That is bananas. Okay, for these timestamps, I used the 4K Blu-ray disc version. Depending on where and how you're watching, timestamps may differ slightly. Are you ready? Let's go!
Woo!
1:19, the dawn of time. Since girls existed, there have been dolls, but they were baby dolls, so girls could only play at being mothers. This is showing you right from birth, girls were expected to serve only one function. This plays a huge part in Barbie figuring herself out. 1:46, we get the shot of Barbie like the monolith from 2001 with Thus Spoke Zarathustra playing here as it did there. If you're not familiar, it's used in 2001 to represent forbidden knowledge and a sign or symbol of change, which is also known as transition. The music was inspired by a novel of the same name by Nietzsche, which is difficult to explain concisely. It's about trying to reject the prejudices of human society by creating our own value to become something better. It's about rejecting expectations in search of eternal joy. And if that doesn't read to you like a trans person rejecting who society says we have to be, living a life faking a role that makes us miserable in pursuit of self-actualization and finding joy as our true selves, then what are we even doing here? And yeah, it absolutely also works for the surface-level feminism story, and that's the genius of using it here. As with the Matrix films, there are layers to everything, and much of it works on multiple levels. And the knowledge that we don't have to conform to what society says we have to be and who it says we are, that is very much forbidden knowledge. Society has worked really hard to keep trans people hidden so we can't see each other and know we can do it too. See the Trans Tuesday on Trans Medicalism and WPATH Standards of Care 1 for more on that, which was just last week in episode 60. And so, when the little girl touches the Barbie monolith, the forbidden knowledge that she doesn't have to conform to stereotypical gender roles, what happens? A loud warning buzz scares her off. 2:18. And that leads to the smashing of the baby dolls, the rejection of the false binary of society. And again, for more on that, see the Trans Tuesday on the False Dichotomy, episode 11 of this here show. This one's going to come up so many times. Go check it out.
It's just a really fun scene.
It really is.
I know as soon as I get forbidden knowledge, the first thing I want to do is smash something with it.
2:50. Here's our first visual Matrix reference, Barbie in the white void, just as Neo was. For Neo, this happened when he was at a construct, not the real world, and this is absolutely setting up that at the beginning of our story, that's where Barbie exists. 3:40. Thanks to Barbie, all problems of feminism and equal rights have been solved. That's what the Barbies think anyway, and they're all living in Barbie land, which note is encased in pink. You get that satellite shot of the pink heart around Barbie land. Barbie is in pink. It's a lie. Obviously, misogyny has not been, quote unquote, solved.
And it's a very funny line in the movie.
It is.
It is. She's in the pink matrix.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. 3 minutes, 53 seconds. Look at this shot of Barbie in bed with the roof opening. Remember when I said to look for when blue and pink were together? She's between the blue and pink, between the gender binary. She's not a cis man or a cis woman. Transness falls between and or outside the binary. Barbie's still in pink, though, everywhere. Conforming to strict gender stereotypes and roles is not her best day every day. This is all shot to show you she's very clearly going through the motions. She does this every day. It's always the same. And her smile? Look, you've seen the entire movie already, right? Margot Robbie is incredible in it, and this smile is not Barbie's real smile. It's fake. It's plastered on because that's what's expected. Every trans person is plastered on that smile to hide the pain pre-transition.
I just want to say, too, in that opening shot where it's showing Barbie for the first time laying in her bed,
yeah,
the images that surround her are squares. They're boxes. They're pink boxes. There's corners. There's no, like, softness. There's a little bit of some swirls, but aside from that, like, what she's encased in looks like a box.
Yeah. Very great observation. 4 minutes, 34 seconds. Barbie's feet are forced into the high heel position, which is a great visual gag based on the dolls, but my friends, it is so much more. Like the machine parts on human bodies in The Matrix, this represents the same thing. Mm-hmm. This is showing you Barbie's body has been changed without her consent. This is a visual representation of the wrong puberty that society forces us through, which contorts and modifies our bodies against our wishes, putting us through traumatic body horror. In the allegory, this shot right here shows you Barbie is an adult who's gone through the wrong puberty and whose body has been changed in ways she never wanted. She didn't have access to puberty blockers as a kid. This is an adult trans woman figuring herself out. 4 minutes, 56 seconds. Barbie doesn't have a mirror. If you're not familiar with how reflections and photos are so difficult for trans people, see It's Trans Tuesday for more info at tillystranstuesdays.com. But here, Barbie is in pink, her dress, in pink, the mirror border, in pink, her entire house. She is buried under a mountain of lies and doubts about who she is and who she can be, and she cannot see her own true reflection. She doesn't know who she is and can't see herself. 5 minutes and 5 seconds. Barbie walks on the water of the pool. Is this a symbol of the artificiality of the world of lies she's living in? Absolutely. But also consider this. Walking on water is a very religiously heavy concept, right? A miracle performed by the one son of the divine. And in The Matrix, the quote-unquote one is not, in fact, a single savior of humanity, but ourselves. We are the one we've been waiting for because we can self-actualize and save ourselves. And so, just maybe, this moment is telling you Barbie can also save herself by transitioning. Thanks for being here, Lexi.
Well, thanks for having me.
It took almost an entire episode just to give you the context through which I'm discussing this. There's a truly remarkable journey ahead of you, so keep an open mind and join me on the ride. Maybe we'll get closer to fine. Tilly Bridges and Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The Google Doc and social media versions of this week's topic and all past topics are available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Hive, on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, at facebook.com/tillysbridges, and on Insta and Threads at heckyeahtillybridges. And you can find Susan on most of those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A. and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.
There's
Henry, hold on, our cat is...
He's not going to do that.
No, he's causing problems.
Babe. Oh, Henry.